Well, it's Tuesday morning and it's just after 9 a.m. and that means it's time for the Law and You, and it's a very good morning to John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group.
Yeah, good morning, Colin. How are you?
Very well. How about you?
Got a bit of a wet tail, but other than that, fighting fit. And it's great to see that Radiothon is rolling along, notwithstanding the weather.
Not only is John from the Bell Legal Group, but he's also chairman of the board here at 4CRB. So Radiothon 2021, or any Radiothon for that matter, is very important to us all.
Certainly is, Colin, and it's great to see all the volunteers out there. I went round this morning and had a quick chat to them and thanked them for their time and coming in to assist. And also thank you to all of our sponsors who have been donating prizes for Radiothon to make it an interesting Radiothon for 2021. So that's really good to see. But the purpose of this program is, as always, to provide free legal advice. And we've had Judy sitting there very patiently waiting. And so we'll go to her call without any further delay. Good morning, Judy. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
That's good. How can I help you today?
I've got a little bit of a problem. On the 15th of the 12th, I entered into a contract to have some security doors into my new unit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I got a quote. Someone come out and measured and quote, and it was $6,197.40. Now, they were supposed to be ready to put into the new building on about the end of January, mm-hmm. but it wasn't until early March when they finally came. Now, I didn't hear from the company in all that time.
Mm.
So they came in and put the security doors in. That was fine. And then a week later, I received a bill for an extra $1,009.80 on top of the $6,197. I paid the deposit of $3,098.70, and then I was supposed to pay the other $3,098 on completion, which
right.
I did.
Mm.
So there's an outstanding amount of $1,009.80. So they are chasing me for this. And what they said was that the original quote was for five doors, and the sixth door was missed off the original quote because there was two with, like, double doors.
Mm.
So now they're saying that they had not contacted me at all to say that there was a problem, just demanding this extra money.
Yes. Well, I certainly think that that's quite improper, Judy. I mean, if they've quoted you to do the required number of doors and, you know, they've not communicated to you and said, oh, look, we're terribly sorry, but we made an error, it's actually going to be another $1,000 because we missed a door off the quote, but they've gone ahead and just simply installed it all as per what you thought was the original quote, then I think it's rather poor form, and I question whether they're going to be able to recover that additional amount. You've obviously spoken to them about it, and what, they're just stonewalling you, are they?
I cannot get to speak to the manager. I have rang him on two occasions, and I've been told, oh, he'll ring you back. But he just does not ring me back. So, obviously, he just doesn't want to
talk about
speak
it.
To me about it.
Yes. Whereabouts are you located, Judy? Which suburb?
In Benowa.
Benowa. Okay, look, what I would suggest you do is probably give a call to Consumer Affairs. Have you got a pen handy?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so their number is 137468. I would suggest that you give them a call, 137468. Give them a call and just go over what's happened. The other thing I would do is I would write either an email or a letter to the manager. Have you been keeping a note of the number of times you've tried to call?
No, I haven't.
But you can probably remember when approximately when you would have an idea of how many times you've tried to call?
Yes.
Okay. What I would suggest you do is also send an email to the manager or to the company. Presumably there'd be an email address on their quote or something like that. I would send an email. You have access to email, do you?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. I would send them an email and say, look, you know, I've tried to call you on, I've called and left messages for you to ring me on at least three occasions or however many it is, and I'm very disappointed to see that, you know, you've not called back. I was given a quote for this amount, which I accepted in good faith. Was there any time frame on when they were meant to be installed? You said it was meant to be the end of January.
Yes, it was supposed to be the end of January.
Yeah, so I think I would say, you know, you were meant to install. Was there any communication between January and when they finally turned up in March or not?
I had to ring.
You had to call them.
Call them to find out what was going on.
Okay. So I would record all of that in your email and say, look, you know, I signed up in good faith on the 15th of December. I was advised that these security doors would be installed by the end of January. Nothing happened. The end of January came and went. Nothing happened. No communication from your company. I've had to ring to try and continually find out what was going on. Finally, some 1.5 months after the due date for installation, the installation was done. I paid the balance as per the quote, and then I received this bill with an explanation that that I'm being charged because whoever did the quote missed the fact that there was an additional door. And I think I would just go that way and say, you know, I don't intend to pay the amount. I want the manager to call me to confirm that there will be no payment, there will be no requirement for payment. And in addition to that, as I say, Judy, I'd also get on to Consumer Affairs.
Okay.
All right then.
Okay, thank you so much for that.
All the very best. Time on 4CRB marches along. It's just coming up to 13 minutes past 9 past 10 on the tweet as we say hi to Robin. G'day, Robin. How are you today?
Yes, good morning, John. Just a couple of questions. The first one, can you just clarify for me the difference between an enduring power of attorney and just a power of attorney, just as a sort of broad understanding for starters?
Okay. So you have in Queensland, you have two forms of power of attorney. You can have a general power of attorney, which is what is commonly referred to as just a power of attorney. Now, that power of attorney is normally used in business. So it would be, for example, a company appointing an officer of the company or a director to sign or an employee to sign on behalf of the company. Or it may be used for someone who's in business going away for a short time and they want to authorise someone to sign. The enduring power of attorney is the form of power of attorney that is commonly used for people wishing to appoint attorneys for their personal and health matters as well as financial matters. And the important difference is that a general power of attorney, so if you were to give someone a general power of attorney and you became mentally incompetent, the power of attorney is automatically terminated. But an enduring power of attorney, as the name suggests, endures on notwithstanding the fact that you may lose capacity.
Right, okay.
So the long and the short of it is that for a husband and wife, normally you would use an enduring power of attorney. If you're in business, you may consider using a general power of attorney, depending on the circumstances.
Well, thanks for that. And with regard to the enduring power of attorney, in the case of trying to help my sister who has no assets, just her pension in the bank, which is now being directed to Westside Care, is there any great need? There is, I'm subsidising her bank account myself, so there is nothing, so would there be the expense of having a solicitor sign off? It would just be another, additional stress to us. So from that point of view, would there be any major reason for doing that if everything else is in order?
Look, I would recommend that you do get a power of attorney in place, an enduring power of attorney, because, for example, if there was documentation that needs to be signed, if you've got to deal with Centrelink, if you've got to deal with the bank, if you've got to sign a consent for your sister to have an operation, any of those kinds of things. If you've got an enduring power of attorney in place, it makes life a lot easier.
I see. Okay. So, now, the other quick, thank you very much for that. The other quick thing, Nabby, while I've got you, is similar to that other lady. I've made the mistake of on an international promo of sending away for a $10 stamp. All the $10 was for the, pardon me, for the postage. It was supposed to be from the US, but the idea was that if you liked the sample, you would go on and you, if you didn't discontinue, they would then begin to take $130 per month for this particular product. If the product that was applied that was in January and the product never arrived, every time you try to contact them, it's an international call center somewhere in Asia, and they really have no capacity. There's no supervisors, no managers, no one else to be forwarded on to it. So would that just be a consumer's affair thing?
So what are they taking the money out of? Off a credit card?
I stopped the card, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because that's what you need to do. There were a lot of these scams going around just a little while back where they were purporting to be promoted by TV personalities, and in fact the TV personalities were not behind the promotions at all. Their identities were being stolen and used as part of this promotion with a bit of text about how wonderful these products were, and they duped a lot of people, and then they make the cancellation process really difficult, and the only way you can actually cancel them is by cancelling the credit card in most cases. I mean, obviously, if the product doesn't arrive, you can also dispute the payment and get and potentially get money back through your credit card, but that requires the bank that issued your credit card to get the money back off the merchant who's received the payment. So you've done the right thing there, but I would still get on to Consumer Affairs and report it because they keep a record of all these things so that people don't get duped. All right, then.
All right, thanks so much.
Okay, Robin, all the very best. Time just keeps rolling along right here on 4CRB, and we're just coming up to 18 minutes past 8 past 9 on the Tweed as we say a very good morning to a very, very patient Rose. Good morning, Rose. How are you today?
Hello. Good morning, John. Mine's an enduring power of attorney question too. John, has there been any changes to the forms in the last 12 months or something like that?
Yes, there have. Yes, so from the 30th of November last year, this is Queensland we're talking about here, by the way.
Yes.
There's been a new form of power of attorney come in. But if you had an existing power of attorney that was valid under the old form, there's no need to change it.
Okay. My brother-in-law, he's in hospital at the moment and not in a good way. And he was very methodical with, dotting his I's and crossing his T's.
Yep.
And his son is having so much trouble that the banks won't let, he can't get money and I just thought, well, maybe there's something changed that he can't.
Well, no, that what's happened is that the banks have become unbelievably strict in relation to allowing people to operate on powers of attorney because, sadly, there have been a number of instances where people who hold valid powers of attorney have basically misappropriated money out of people's accounts. And sadly, in many of these cases, the worst offenders are family. And so the only time that a power of attorney can be used to take money from
a person...
enduring power of attorney. So what the bank, I think, would normally be looking for in this case, Rose, is a would be a letter from your brother's doctor to say that your doctor no longer has capacity to look after his affairs and that that his power of attorney should be invoked. Otherwise, they require the person who's the donor of the power of attorney, which is your brother, to go into the branch and confirm that they're happy for the power of attorney to be used. And it also depends on the wording of the power of attorney too, Rose. Some powers of attorney say that the power of attorney is effective immediately.
Yes,
and even where it has the words immediately in it, I've found in recent times that the banks are still requiring evidence that the donor of the power of attorney has lost capacity. And then the other form, of course, is the one that says that this power of attorney takes effect on the person losing capacity. So what I would recommend, has your brother lost capacity?
Well, More or less, yes.
Well, if you can get a letter off, if you can get a letter off his doctor to say that he should invoke his power of attorney, that should solve the problem for his son at the bank.
Okay. So really, the doctors have got power over what you have signed for your enduring power of attorney.
Well,
then,
not really. It's unfortunately because the banks are trying to protect customers from being ripped off by people using powers of attorney, they've tightened their guidelines. So it's not the doctor at all. It's sadly, it's the bank, and I can't honestly blame the banks because they're just trying to protect the customer so that some unscrupulous relative doesn't rip a whole lot of money out of the bank account. So it's just the perfect storm that's resulted from the complete decay of the moral fabric of our society, which has been ongoing over such a long time.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, John, thanks for that.
All the very best. And the time on 4CRB has just passed 21 minutes past 9, past 10 on the Tweed. The Law and You is the program. 5520888 is our telephone number. That number again, 5520888, if you have a question or a query. Presently no callers online, so you'll get straight through. Now, while we're waiting for some calls to come through, I did actually have something I wanted to talk about last week, but fortunately we received that many calls that it wasn't possible for me to raise this subject. But one of my colleagues, Janine O'Brien, has recently written a very interesting article, which is going up on the Bell Legal Group website, about challenging a superannuation death benefit payment. Now, it's something that is really interesting because more and more you find that superannuation death benefits comprise the largest portion of a deceased person's assets, and particularly where there's a life policy involved. So if there's been a life policy that's been taken out as part of your super, then that will form part of the death benefit that will be payable after you pass away. And the big thing here, of course, is that a lot of people also think that superannuation can just be dealt with under your will. And that's unfortunately not the case because, like property that's owned as joint tenants, superannuation does not automatically come into your estate unless you've signed a binding death benefit nomination which specifies that the proceeds of that policy are to go to your legal personal representative, who of course is the executor under your will. So the trustees of a super fund, and particularly for industry funds or retail funds, must pay the death benefit in accordance with the rules that are set out in the deed to ensure that that the payment is made properly. And there are very limited numbers of people who can actually receive a superannuation death benefit payment. Obviously, the member's spouse, and that's whether legal or de facto, a child of any age, including adopted children and ex-nuptial children, or even a stepchild, a person who's in an interdependency relationship, and as I said earlier, of course, your legal personal representative, who is the executor under your will. Now, if you want to make sure that the super, if you want the super to go to someone who does not fall into one of those categories of being your spouse, a child, a person who's in an interdependency relationship with you, then the only way that you can get your super to someone who falls outside of those that group is to leave your super to your legal personal representative, or in other words, leave it to the executor of your will, and then under your will, you can specify that that amount will go to the person that you wish to nominate. Now, if you want to deal with the super without it going into your estate, then the best way to do that is to do a non-lapsing binding death benefit nomination. And as the name suggests, that death benefit nomination will never lapse. and it is binding on the trustee. The important thing is that it must be strictly drawn up in accordance with the terms of the deed, the trust deed for the super fund, and often there is a pro forma of that binding death benefit nomination that's actually annexed to the deed. Some retail and industry funds don't allow non-lapsing binding death benefit nominations, and you can only do either a lapsing binding death benefit nomination, which will normally lapse after 3 years, or a non-binding death benefit nomination, which is simply an indication of where you want the death benefit to go. And just bear in mind that if you do a non-binding death benefit nomination, or if you're lapsing binding death benefit nomination does in fact lapse, in other words, you don't renew it after 3 years, then the trustee is going to have the discretion about where the super will actually be paid, where the death benefit will be paid, and they can entertain all likely comers who fall within the category. Now, this was brought home to me many years ago when I was received a telephone call from a young lady who had just recently been widowed. Her husband had been killed in a tragic sporting accident, and she at that time was pregnant with their first child, and so she wanted to get the super payout, but the superannuation, the trustees of the super fund discovered that her husband had actually had a child out of wedlock many years previously, and that child was living with the mother down south. And so as a result of that, the trustees of the super fund, because there was no non-lapsing binding death benefit nomination in place, decided that they were going to pay a substantial amount of the death benefit nomination to a trustee to look after for that child, the child that was born out of wedlock, and then the balance of the super came to his widow who was expecting their first child. So that was a completely unexpected consequence in that situation, and so it just really does underscore the importance of ensuring that you do have a binding death benefit nomination in place, and preferably a non-lapsing one. Now, if the trustees of a industry or commercial fund do decide they're going to pay the super in a particular way, and you're one of those entitled to receive the super and you're not satisfied, there is an Australian Financial Complaints Authority which will deal with your complaint if you don't believe if you believe there's been some error made in the way the trustee has made their decision. But importantly, AFSA cannot make a decision that is contrary to the terms of the fund's trust deed. And if the trustees have validly exercised their decision-making processes and come to a conclusion, then there's little that can be done. So the long and the short of it is to make sure that you get those binding death benefit nominations in place. Well, Colin, we're almost at time and we have no more calls. I hope everyone's out there ringing to support their radio station, pledge their support.
Absolutely. And look, this is a perfect example of one of the services 4CRB brings to the community. Free legal advice, thanks to John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. And at the end of the day, this is one of the reasons to support your station. Cost you $60, 55208888. You can also do that on the web. And we also incentivise that with some wonderful prizes. The prizes at the moment are a 40-inch LED Hisense TV with a built-in DVD player valued at $400. How about that?
And that's from our great friend
Dawn Critchlow.
So thank you very much, Dawn, if you're listening out there. And Colin was telling me earlier that you're endeavouring to get Lex Bell to come in, my good friend and my former partner and mentor, to come in and talk about the good old days in the council. So that'll be a great one to look forward to coming forward. And, of course, where else but a station like 4CRB would you be able to hear that? You're certainly not going to hear it on commercial radio, that's for sure. So
absolutely,
that's the reason why it's so important that you support your community radio station, 4CRB, in our current radiothon. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. I'll look forward to being back with you again next week for more of the Law You Knew. But as always, until then, it's goodbye and God bless.